Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to History Rage, the podcast where myth and misconception is divorced, beheaded and then dies. And welcome to another of our live specials from the Gloucester History Festival, coming to you from the picture postcard setting of Blackfriars Priory. I am your regular host, Paul Bavel, and forging her path to power today, we welcome Tudor historian, assistant professor of history and author of Thorne's Lust and Glory, Dr. Estelle Paronk. Estelle, welcome to History Rage.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, you look like you're excited and seething away and ready to kick off already. So before we dive into what you've come here to get out of your system, then, yes, would you start by just giving us an idea of you and your background, the work that you've done? I understand that was all in a pretty short space of time between turning up in the UK and then grabbing PhDs in a foreign language. And yeah, so tell us.
Yeah, well, so I came to this country in 2010. And yes, I'm French, so I was not bilingual. I knew the language, I knew English, but I was far from being fluent in bilingual. But I was really determined to pursue my passion for history. So at first, I just started being a French language assistant at Queen Mary University. This is how I got my way in into this country. I even kind of lied at my interview saying, like, I'm the girl for you. You will regret it if you don't hire me. And I kind of made up that I had a bit of experience, which I didn't at the time. But I was so determined to make it work and for me to be in London and to learn anything I needed to learn, you know, hitting the ground running. And then I managed somehow, I don't know how, to get into a PhD at University College London. And there were like probably the most difficult years of my life because my supervisor, former supervisor, hi Jason, if you're listening, you were lovely. But at the same time, you said, like, you know, if you can't write it properly in English, you might as well like go back to France and write it in French. And that was a slap in the face. But at the same time, it was determining for me, like, to be like, okay, I'm not good enough. So let's work on this. And I worked my ass off to be where I am today, next to you, Paul, and doing this podcast.
Pinnacle of career achievement right here, isn't it?
Well, you know what? It kind of is. Like when someone asks you to, you know, to be part of their program and what they do and just recognizing the work you're doing. So yeah, so after 6 books, 3 edited collections, 1 academic monograph and 2 trade books, I have finally, I think, kind of established myself in the Tudor world, at least I hope so.
And what's the current one that's coming out shortly about then?
So the one that's coming out in what, two, three weeks?
Yeah, it's right.
Second of May. Thorne's Lust and Glory. It's called The Betrayal of Anne Boleyn. If you look at the cover, there's a fleur de lis. So it's to make you understand that it's going to be, was there or not a French betrayal?
And I believe we're going to be diving into this very subject right now. So, you know what History Rage is about. You've come here to get something off your chest. So what is the one thing you wish everyone would just stop believing?
I think I would love people to stop thinking about Anne Boleyn just as the wife of Henry VIII. I think that we need to realise that it might sound crazy what I'm about to say, but she was her own person. What a
shock horror.
Oh my God. Can you believe that? And so I would love for us to stop thinking that her life started when Henry VIII started having an interest in her. For fuck's sake, honestly, she was her own free woman. She's someone who was so feisty, fiery, passionate, intelligent, vulnerable. She had bad sides. Who doesn't have bad sides? But she was incredible for her time. She was so modern for her time. And so I really wish that we stop just thinking about Anne Boleyn as the second wife of Henry VIII. You know, yeah. I mean, like, I wish we were just seeing this woman for who she was. And actually, that we were just starting to see all these women, all these six wives, as their own free women and for who they were. Instead of like just putting, you know, I just hate this constant association of Anne Boleyn with Henry VIII. And I don't understand why he's her murderer, right? Like, so we can go into that as well. But he's the reason why she lost her head. But there is so much before him. And even when she's with him, she has her own agency. And that's why I cover in my book as well. Mm-hmm. Her own relationship with the French played a huge part in the Tudor and English history. And I wish that people were more paying attention to what she did, how she did it, how she mm-hmm. was her own agency, you know, and it's really something that I'm trying to put forward with this book.
Yeah, it's almost like if you look at these ladies, like Henry VIII is the least interesting part of their life.
A complete, honestly, you could not say it better, honestly, literally. And but at the same time, it's just so sad. Honestly, what has he done? Apart from marrying six different women. Like, honestly. I mean, all these women really brought something. They were all, you know, unique. And even Jane Seymour, we don't have much on her, but there's so much. I'm sure there's so much more to discover. There's so much more to say about her. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, when people are like, oh, but we've lost Eustace Chapuis' letters in 1537. I'm like, and we don't have French records? Hello, like, do you think Eustace Chapuis was the only man on the
whole empire? Over
I mean, honestly, are you listening to yourself? Like, you think there was like no other ambassadors that you can look at their letters? It's just it's frustrating.
So tell us that story then. The French background of Anne Boleyn then, because I understand that she spent about 7 years actually in the French court, or that's at least the claim.
Well, it's not just a claim. She was there.
There we go.
How do we know? Like, so that's a very good question. Basically, so that's the first part of my book. We know she was there because we know that Thomas Boleyn asked Margaret of Austria to release basically Anne Boleyn from her service in Mechelen. I don't know. I was going to say Mechelen because mm-hmm. I'm French. And to be sent to France to serve and to be part of Mary Tudor, so Henry VIII's sister, to be part of her household when she becomes Queen of France. So we know that she's going to France. Then we know that when Mary Tudor, you know, her husband dies and there's going to be another king, we know that there's another letter saying that they want Anne Boleyn to remain in the household of the next queen, which is going to be Queen Claude. We also know this because we know that Lancelot de Carle, who is going to write the poem about the life and death of Anne Boleyn, is going to mention the fact that she spent 7 years in France. And he even said, and I like that, that she was almost more French. She was a natural French woman. I can't remember exactly that. It's in my book, buy it. But it's like, sorry. Like
shameless plug, best kind.
I lost my dignity when I gave birth twice. So like, you know, like, there's no... Forget it. Like, there's no shame here. I'm definitely plugging my book because I'm very proud of it and it was very hard to write and I'll explain why. But yeah, so we know she was in France. And what really intrigues me with her time in France and what I do in the first part of my book is that because she's and people who love Anne Boleyn, please don't get annoyed here. All right, listen to me. She was a nobody at the time. She was just the daughter of a courtier and an ambassador, right? Mm-hmm. She's the daughter of Thomas Boleyn. You know, women were just daughter, wife, sister of someone with, you know, not really real people. That, you know what I mean, Paul? Like, you know.
Yeah.
So she was just the daughter of someone. But what's interesting that she was definitely in the household of Queen Claude. What I tried to do in that book is to see if she became, or if she was sent to the household of Marguerite of Angoulême. And it's going to be disappointing for you guys, because I can't give you a definite answer. What I can tell you is that in terms of records of households, you know, we have yearly records of them. I only found 2 years, I think 1515 and 1518 for Marguerite of Angoulême's household. And I couldn't see the name of Anne Boleyn. It does not mean that Anne Boleyn is not in 1519. She's not in 1520. That she's not in 1517. It means that we don't have these stupid records. And so all I know is that in 1515, 1518, she wasn't. So yeah, so what I try to do in my first book, when you're going to read it, first of all, I focus mostly on the French sources and the French archives, and I try to show you what it was like to be at Francis I's court, what it was like to be in France. So I'm following Queen Claude mostly. So where Queen Claude is, I assume Anne Boleyn is. And it's not like, I assume as if like, oh my God, maybe she wasn't. Like, I mean, come on, she's a lady in waiting. Where else do you want her to be?
Yeah, she should be the lady in waiting to the Queen. They turn up with them.
I mean, yeah. And so what was very interesting for me is to give you this idea that Anne Boleyn actually traveled France. She traveled France with Queen Claude. When Queen Claude and Queen Louise of Savoy, so Francis I's mother, and Marguerite of Angoulême went to the south of France in Provence, Marseille, to welcome Francis I, who had just won his major victory, Marignano, in October 1515. Mm-hmm. And here, it's very easy. Like, I have sources, French sources, that describe this magnificent royal progress, but it's just women, right? It's just women on this progress. Mm-hmm. And going from Paris, you know, Parisian region.
I'm aware of and such then, a region, yeah.
And then you go down slowly and Lyon. And you have the what they were doing, the festivities that were prepared for the queens, the weather. And I want you to imagine how much it must have affected a 15, 14-year-old who saw all this glory and who was seeing that this glory was for women. Mm. There was no king with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Anne Boleyn thought that maybe women and queens could be more powerful than actually they were, because the dynamic of the relationship between Francis I, his mother and his sister, and even his wife, is very unique. It's not like something, it's not usual. He's very, he lets the woman in his life have a voice, have agency, mostly because he was brought up by his mother.
Yeah.
And so when she comes back to England with Henry VIII, at first, I think he's intrigued, the fact that she has so much sassiness. And then he's a bit like pissed off. He's like, what the fuck? You're just a woman.
Oh, you're actually too much hard work.
No, it's not that. It's like, oh, fuck, you're just a woman. Get back in your place. And Anne Boleyn's like, no. I have opinions. I don't want to hear your opinions. Well, I have them anyway, you know? Like, and that's where it went.
That's where it goes downhill from there, yeah. So how did Anne's years in France then shape, like, cultural interests, influences?
It shaped her. It shaped everything. I really argue that Anne Boleyn would not be the woman she became without these years in France.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that it's just because she spent time with the French and we're so amazing. We're not. But I mean, I would love to say we are, but we're not. That she would, then she became herself amazing. I think, but she experienced things that no one else had experienced. Even when you think about it, Henry VIII had not traveled that much compared to Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn literally went to the south of France. South of France is a completely different culture. And there's this idea that she saw so much, and I think that's why she's so intriguing, and that why there was such an interest in her. Because, you know, all the other English women never left England, never seen, you know, and her, she was completely different for that. She had experienced the south of France, she had experienced the Francis I court, she had been to very big political events, you know, obviously, you know, the Field of Gold, you know, and then other events where, you know, big banquet where her father came as well, you know, like she was at the heart of European politics very early on. So when she came back, you know, it's not just about, you know, fashion. Was she having like the Frank Bernet, who bloody cares, honestly, how they were. What's important is like what she had in her head.
Yeah.
And at first, I don't believe, obviously she comes back And I put in my book, like, she was hoping for glory. And I think people don't understand what I mean by that, because there has been some early readers. So I'm going to explain to you guys who are listening to the podcast. I'm not saying at that point that she wants to be queen. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that when she comes back, she knows that she's going to want to pursue her family's ambition to marry well. And it's what she's hoping with. It's what I mean by glory. You know, inside or personally, she hoped for glory. And glory at that time meant marrying well. And it's what she hoped with Henry Percy. When that fell through because a king just wanted to sleep with her, she's like, okay, that's not going to be good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay.
I'm not getting anything out of mistress.
No, no, no. And you know, that's so interesting because people are like, but wait a minute, mistresses, they're not badly treated, right? Like, I mean, if you think about it, they are giving lands, titles, mm-hmm. and money. And she saw that at Francis I's court. He had big royal mistresses, like not big fat, like just...
Yeah, no, I know where you're going.
Like important influence.
French king, it happens, you know.
So, you know, but I think she realized that it was that no matter how well-paid or wealthy or lands or titles the mistresses were given, no one was Queen Claude. No one mm-hmm. had the status of Queen Claude. No one, like, and I think she was like, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
That's definitely not good enough. If a king is going to stop me from, you know, marrying well, just for me to become a mistress and become his mistress and have titles and lands, that's not going to be enough. I'm going to need more. And I think that's all where it all started, really. And I think that then, the only path was becoming queen of England. But what people don't understand is how much also then the French played a part in this. How they saw her as, I call her, a substitute French princess. Because they really used her as a pawn. Mm-hmm. And I think where she's misguided is that she's not royal blood.
Yeah.
When you are royal blood, of course, you know, you're bringing a dynasty. And I think she almost felt like she was bringing this dynastic alliance, but she wasn't.
Yeah. And she does have that impressive kind of Irish side as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Of course. But like, it's still not a French princess. It would never have dared to cut off the head of a French princess. It was not going to do it. To Catherine of Aragon, it was that. But Anne Boleyn was fair game.
Yeah.
So, and that's quite sad when you really think about it. I know it's not a sad podcast, but yeah.
But no, you're right. She is. She's not bringing a political alliance that, say, Henry VIII would need. It's not like an alliance with Catholic Spain or...
Exactly.
You know.
But at the same time, it's so funny because when you look at the sources and the relationship with the French ambassadors and how she favored them and how Francis is happy with Anne Boleyn as a choice for a future wife, it's interesting, really.
Mm.
But what people don't understand is like, you know, yeah, but did they want the break with Rome? No. No, no, it was a step too far. It was a step too... Like, no one thought that Henry would go that far to marry Anne Boleyn. That's not what Francis wanted. Like, it's a massive... You know... It's almost like, oh, shit. We shouldn't have done that.
So tell me a bit more about this role that the French play within kind of like forging that marriage then.
Well, they are in support of Anne.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because, as I said, she favoured the French ambassadors. So she's often with them. She's often offering, you know, private audiences to them for Henry. She's not just a woman that is sitting... You know, be pretty and shut up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's really, first of all, she's really politically intelligent, though I would say she misread a few things. Like, I mean, at the same time I say that, you know what, and it annoys me to say that, because I actually don't know what Francis I told her in 1532 when she saw him again in Calais, Boulogne. And she really forced her, she was not supposed to see him in person, but there was a dinner and she basically arrived with her ladies in waiting, masked, and I think Henry VIII must have been super pissed off with that. And then she ended up talking to Francis I in person. What we don't know what they actually told each other. What we know is that after that, there's a secret marriage. And I almost feel like, did she misunderstand him? Did she promise him, if I'm Queen of England, you can get this alliance, you can get this, I'll help you. I will basically be your eyes and ears. And it's important to remember that because she was kind of eyes and ears for her father when she was in France.
Mm-hmm.
So she's always had been kind of, she's not the only one who was an informant to her father. That's what one thing I want to say, obviously. But second of all, it's true that he had kind of an advantage as an ambassador because he knew like how Queen Claude was feeling and he knew like some personal and political stuff through Anne. And so I think here she was probably promising something as well to Francis. And did Francis I say, yes, okay, I will support you? Did he say it in person? Did he promise something? Because what I don't understand is after, if you read my book, you'll realize that, like, the French, apart from one, and read it, because honestly, it broke my heart. There's one French ambassador that's going to try until the fucking end to help Anne. And it's an amazing story because this guy, his patron is Marguerite of Angoulême. So if Marguerite of Angoulême, I really had hated Anne Boleyn at that time, you know, after she became queen, because she refused to see her. She refused to go to Calais. She refused to keep having a correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
But here I'm thinking the fact that she's still allowing someone she gives money to fight for her until the end, almost the end. It's called The Impossible Mission. I think it's chapter 10. And it's just so hard to read. I mean, it was hard to write and it's going to be hard for you to read because you almost think, oh, it might change everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you realize that the French are like, they want Anne by the side of Henry VIII, but they have so many other political agendas and it goes against it. What they're mm-hmm. doing with the Break of Rome is going against it. And it put Francis I in a very bad position. And then you have the very, you know, I think we forget to think that they were human beings. And you have like just ambassadors, French ambassadors, who just could not stand Anne for who she was.
Yeah.
They saw her as a, you know, a woman should stay in a fucking place.
Yeah. You're not royal. You're a woman.
Yeah. And that sense of how they felt. I think that especially one is such a horrible man. Horrible. He's just so horrible. I can't stand him. Chabot, just can't stand this man. He's bloody horrible.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So before I get into the realms of like, and we are going to talk downfall and so forth, but she's got that exposure to the French court and she's going to be receiving a lot of French education in the middle of that. Now, how does that kind of prepare her and feed that ambition towards the getting into the English court? Because when she comes into the English court, she almost commands it to an extent. Might piss Henry off, but she's good at what she does up to a point. Did the French actually prepare her for that?
I don't think they prepare in an active way. It's just that she's so good at listening, at observing, taking into account things that then she is going to be different when she arrives at the English court. But let's not forget that at first, she's obviously put in the household of Catherine of Aragon.
Mm-hmm.
So the one who's still very much in control is Catherine of Aragon. The thing that Anne Boleyn has for herself is the fact that Henry really wants her and that she refuses to give in just for a mistress title.
Mm-hmm.
The problem as well with Anne is obviously she's a bit cocky. Like, why would you bloody promise to give a son? Why on earth?
That is out of your control, young lady.
Absolutely. But she was almost like certain, convinced that she could do it.
And I'm going to give birth to six, one of them.
Yeah,
should be in
I think that's what she believed. I think she didn't take into account that, you know, she was in her 30s. And so we don't have the same diet. We don't have the same medicines. We don't have, there's lots of things that we don't, like nowadays, women in their 30s, late 30s, I'm an example of that, early 40s and stuff, you can still have children.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also because we have a very good diet. We have a longer, you know, life expectancy. Like,
yeah.
And we have like medicines, we have support. There's lots of reasons why we can go up to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Lower risk of death in childbirth.
Yeah. Well, you say, honestly, I would have died twice with my childbirth. So, yeah.
I've attended childbirths. I would never put a woman I love through that. That was a ringside seat to a bloodbath, and I want nowhere near it again.
You understand that. Like, yeah. You know, but also, like, it's getting pregnant and everything. And I think, you know, so she had Elizabeth, she must have been like around 32 or 33 years old.
Yeah.
So then having multiple kids after that, you know, she's not 15. She's not Queen Claude who just, you know, when people was like telling me as well, oh, Queen Claude was so weak and fragile. You know, it's always like everyone tells you that. What? For fuck's sake, the woman was pregnant for 9 years. She got 7 children out of her vagina and she's what?
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
She's like, what? Weak? The woman is a fucking warrior, mate. Like, drives me nuts as well. We can do another video on that if you want. Like, but honestly, that bloody annoys me. Like, giving birth is like warrior type, like, you know. So anyway, so I think I'm going to just misjudge that you're not 15, you're not in your 20s, you're early 30s, mid 30s. And I think then it got harder and harder. Also, the pressure was on. I mean, like, it was such a disappointment. Henry didn't hide the disappointment. No one, you know, probably people were making fun of her. Even Francis I of France said, oh, fuck. He didn't say it like, maybe he said it like that. You know, he didn't write it like that. But oh,
he wrote it in French, of course.
Oh, putain de merde. He must have said, oh, bloody hell, the idiot. She didn't give birth to her son. What am I going to do now? We're fucked.
So we've got then, we get through Anne's life in court and to the downfall then. So if she's as popular in France as is made out, and, you know, and people just love Anne, why is nobody, I mean, apart from your one guy that you said that fights to the end, potentially because he's being paid, but possibly because
I think he really liked her too. Yeah.
But there is a whole French court system there that is apparently on Anne's side that really just goes, yeah, okay.
It's because they had other political agendas and they could not secure those. And they were more important for Francis I
such as
the life of Anne Boleyn. So such as making sure that his second son was getting married to the niece of the Pope, Catherine of Medici, such as making sure that he was still in favor of with the Pope, so against his archenemy, Charles V of Spain. So for him, you know, like, an alliance with England was important, but not if it was going to create too much problems with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne Boleyn became more and more liability. And there was no reason for them at some point to say, okay, we're going to read. Like, and also, I think it also came as a shock because there's another thing that people tend to forget. Her downfall is so quick. So the news traveled not that quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're in 16th century, so it is quicker than people think, but it's not as quick as today. You know, no one is texting his daughter, oh my God, Henry wants to kill Anne. Yeah. You know, like,
it's not shared on Instagram.
It's not shared. There's no, you know, Twitter post or X post or whatever. So it's very, you know, like, but even for Anne, like, I think until the end of it, she's going to be executed on 19th of May, 1536. And it's on 2nd of May, when my book is out, but 1536, that her trial and her arrest and trial are going to start. But until that time, like until end of April, she was supposed to go to, what was it? I don't want to say something stupid, but you'll have to check by reading my book, guys, okay? But it's either in Rochester or Dover. There's a trip that she's supposed to take with Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day everyone says, no, you're not going anywhere. And actually, these are the accusations made against you. What?
Yeah.
What accusation? Well, you cheated on, you know, on Henry.
With your own brother.
Yeah. Well, at first it was just that. What? Yeah. Yeah, you have. No, just with one then. What? And it includes your brother. Oh, what the fuck now? And you look at the trial. It's where I cried. Like, I cried my eyes out. I was filming myself because I have a YouTube channel. So I was filming myself like for B-roll and I ended up crying the whole thing. So not usable. But I was just like, it was so hard. Like the accusation, for example, to give you, I think one that really marked me that I can talk to you about. She was accused of cheating on Henry with, it doesn't matter who, like one of the guys who is going to be executed, 2 weeks after giving birth to Elizabeth. And I'm like, okay, what the?
Really?
Yeah, like what? First of all, like you're blooding like crazy. Like you have so much blood coming out of you. But also like anyone touching you, I think you kill them. You kill them right on the spot. Like you're definitely
not. Just be through that. The last thing you want is more sex.
And also what's crazy is that they accuse her like to do that in Hampton Court, but she's obviously in Greenwich.
Mm-hmm.
And she was obviously isolated because there's a time where you're completely isolated before the birth and after the birth. And some at the trial, they tell her that. And I wonder if she laughed at her. Like, oh, shit. You're fucking serious.
Yeah, you're absolutely gone.
And she was like, oh, I was at Greenwich. No, you were at Hampton Court. Or someone saw me at Hampton Court now. And at some point, you know, she just said, it's so brilliant. She just said, like, I understand. The king wants my death. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but she's like, the king wants my death. I can't save myself. But please, like the six innocent men. Don't go after them. Just kill me, but don't go after them. And that also broke me. That broke me because it shows that Anne Boleyn cared about others. That it's not, you know, she didn't try to save herself. She tried to save the men who obviously, you know, didn't deserve to die.
Yeah. If only one person who's done nothing wrong goes under rather than 17 people who've done nothing wrong go under.
Exactly. And it's so heartbreaking. Like, I mean, this trial and the executioner were very, very hard to write.
You mentioned then the chap that pretty much fights for her up until the end.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, tell me about him and what efforts he's doing. And if it's not too upsetting, how many brick walls he runs into with that.
Oh, so it's Jean du Bellay. So Jean du Bellay is a very important figure. He's from a family of diplomats. And he travels a lot. He's been, you know, diplomat in Rome. He's going to be in England with Anne Boleyn and he's going to meet her. And I believe they develop some sort of friendship. I really do. And basically, I can't exactly remember the date now, but it's 1534. It definitely after she gave birth to a daughter. So 1534, I think they realized that Anne, you know, kind of is in danger of what's happening. But also they realize the French are still upset the fact that the Pope has not recognized their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's going to try to do, it's his last attempt to try to avoid Anne and Henry to be excommunicated and to try to make Anne, you know, legitimate as Queen of England in the eyes of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And it's what he goes. So he goes there, he goes to Rome with his secretaries and everything. And he really thinks he's going to make it. Somehow, like, you know, it's all in my book. All the details, I don't have them on top of my head. But it's incredible because he really believes that he has convinced the Pope, or at least he has given himself enough time to play more political games to convince eventually the Pope to do it. And he's going to be completely, like, he's going to be backstabbed by other cardinals who really don't want Henry and Anne's union to be recognized.
Mm.
And he didn't see it coming. And he's so shocked when he realized that he's been backstabbed by this man. And he knew that he was going to, that, I mean, it's a nest of snake there. And he knew that he was not popular. But he really thought that he bought himself enough time and that he could eventually make this union being recognized by the Catholic Church. So basically that would reverse everything that was going on. Because what people tend to forget, you know, it really annoys me as well. Bloody hell. You know, people think that the break of with Rome is just like, okay, we break with Rome. Bye-bye, guys.
Done
hello.
Now.
See ya. We'll see you later. It didn't happen like that. You know, we give a date because historians and people like having dates. Mm-hmm. But it's a process. It's a longer process than we think. And there's always ways at first, like, of how can we reverse that? How can we reverse the situation? And obviously, Henry VIII is going to go too far. And you know what as well? When people are like telling me, oh, but Anne Boleyn, you know, she was not nice, that whatever, don't be a snowflake, right? But the fact that Anne Boleyn didn't like the fact that the monasteries, the dissolution of monasteries,
yeah.
She voiced her concerns She said, like, you're basically trying... She told Henry and Cromwell, you're basically just trying to get money. That's what you're doing. Yeah. It has nothing to do with...
Good Lord, if there's one thing worse than a powerful woman, it's a powerful woman who's right, isn't it? You
know? That's the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
And she saw it. And I think that we forget that Anne Boleyn was actually very pious. And you know when people are like, yeah, but she was Protestant. There's no such thing in that at this time.
Yeah.
There are only people who are Christians. And I was starting to question the fact that is there corruption or not in the Catholic Church? Can we improve things? And she was part of these people who were like, is there or not corruption? And she was just very curious, very intelligent, and she just liked to read. So bad for a woman.
It's interesting that you raised the point of Christian there as well, because for me, I am quite T-man. But, you know, one of the reasons that I would be, and I will fight anybody on the basis that Anne Boleyn is innocent, is because... we broadly know the confession, the final confession. She's, you know, she is religious enough that she is not going to lie to God.
Absolutely. She, honestly, first of all, when would she have had time to have sex with anyone else? First of all. Second of all, like, do you think they would have waited? Because the date is like 1533. It's even before, you know, so 1533, 34, 35. It's only in 36. And they, oh my, she's been sleeping around. Like, you know, it's just crazy. It makes no sense at all. Mm-hmm. And with her brother, honestly, when you read stuff, the trial, and they say you violate, that's the word, you violate your brother's mouth, you know? You violate your brother's mouth. She loves sex too much. She forced herself on her brother and just makes me puke. Like, honestly, it makes me puke.
Well, thank you very much for that, Estelle. Do you feel better?
I do. I do. Yeah. I'm sure we'll have more of episodes together because I really enjoy this.
Oh, we're going to get you back as often as we can. That was really spectacular. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul.
If you'd like to know more about Estelle's work, then you can and should get a copy of her latest book, Thorns, Lust and Glory, which is out on the 2nd of May, or any of the other back catalogue of books that she has written. And you can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Estelle Paronk, and that's ending PRNQ. There'll be a link in the show notes.
No problem.
And ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We've got more coming for you over the course of the festival. If you've not managed to make it this year, then the festival returns in autumn. Those dates are the 14th of September to the 22nd of September 2024. You can sign up to the festival mailing list at gloucesterhistoryfestival.co.uk and follow them on Twitter at GloucesterFest. And if you want to support us, then you can follow us on Twitter at History Rage, or you can support us on Patreon. Your £5 per month will get you early episodes, entry into all of our prize draws, the invite to put questions to future guests, and of course, the coveted History Rage mug. So from all of us here at the Gloucester History Festival, stay angry. Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis.
I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.